Today is Monday, January 11th, 2020, and it's a very special shiur today, as you will see. But before I go into any great detail, I want to make some corrections. I thank Adam Rosenberg in Chicago today. He made two corrections on last week's shiur. I mentioned the Eimah Kalacha as being Rabbi Lam's uncle. It's Rabbi Lam's grandfather. I was confusing between Rabbi Yoshua Bamble, his Zayda, and Rabbi Yosef Bamble, his uncle. And Jack, I can't see what you're setting up to. A correction. I said 2020. It's 2021. Jack is correct. Thank you. And so that's one correction, that it was his grandfather who wrote the tshuva permitting Torah Vedas to throw out the Malachim. And I mentioned in passing with Nei Yisrael, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Kalevsky, the biography that came out. Rabbi Kalevsky was born in America. He's an American product. He studied, he was a Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vedas and a Mira. I mentioned that. You mentioned Latzko biography, and both of these are incorrect. He was born in St. Louis and attended the Hebrew Theological College in Chicago. He later transferred to Torah Vadas in 1943 until he was drafted into the American Army. But I was wrong. He was not a Yudapeyeshu who went through Shanghai. He was an American product. So I thank you very, very much for the corrections. I also want to mention, I find this to be fascinating. Mendel Gottesman is listening to the shiurim. He's a great-grandson of the original Mendel Gottesman, we'll put it that way. So he sent me a copy of extracts from the Last Will and Testament of Mendel Gottesman. And if you want to see how different the world was then, he left a tremendous foundation. And the interest has to be given away to Tzedakah every year. And in his will, 25% of the income funds go to yeshiva, what we call today Yeshiva University. 5% the Mendel Gottesman Library. 10% Torah Vedas. And he even puts in by Torah Vedas, Mr. Mendel Gottesman, into his will, that all these grants are as long as they continue in faithful tradition to Dvar Hashem. In other words, you can see that at that time, even with Torah Vedas, you wanted to be sure that there'd be a great tomorrow. And it's very fascinating how he established in both in Yeshiva University, I'm using Yeshiva University in context of today, and in Torah Vedas, he established that there'd be Gottesman fellows. And I can tell you, and I've said it before, I'm probably one of the last Gottesman fellows alive, kicking, producing, and performing. Yes, we got a monthly check as Gottesman fellows. And once a year we had a Sudat Hilula, we would call it today, on Mr. Gottesman's yard site. And that's why I remember Mr. Herman Gottesman, your grandfather, and Mr. Benjamin Gottesman attending and speaking. And what a fabulous split the family has. But the skud is even greater. It's not the entire family. Unfortunately, with every family in America, we have those who remained and those who were lost. But here with this family, you have a large representation from Jews, 100%, Kohanim, Bekedusha, Vitara, and more than that, living in Israel, building the future of the Jewish people, Alatmat HaKodesh. So it's a very great achievement. Regarding the criticisms of Torah Vedas and how they're portrayed, so Nachum Lam writes about his brother Shmuel, also my Talmud Shmuel, a Talmud, a Musmach of Torah Vedas. And Shmuel is a Talmud of Rav Avraham Pam, very close to him. And when Art Scroll came out with the biography of Rabbi Pam, Nachum Lamb's brother was very upset. There's no mention that Rav Pam had a secular degree, was a mathematician, and his first teaching job in Teira Vedas was a high school class of mathematics. Shmuel contacted the author, who was his classmate. How do you write about our Rebbe and you don't tell the whole truth? And his classmate answered him, "You're right, I know all of that, but that's Art Scroll. They only published what they want to publish." Regarding the greater family and all that we're speaking about, and there's no question that there was tremendous achievement by Mr. Mendelovich, by his descendants, and we'll come to it slowly but surely. You have to separate the facts and treat it honestly. People wrote to me also about the Machlekes in Teira Vedas. I think I shocked some of them when I gave them very fine details of the Machlekes. But we'll come to it within context, and I always try to portray Torah history in a more positive fashion. But now I want to begin, and I have to tell you something happened that I can only use the word Gilui Eliyahu. I've had a few times in my life where certain things happen that there's no way to describe it except to say there's divine revelation involved. Now, we were talking about Rabbi Shubo. Rabbi Shubo, which becomes a very important theme on the Israeli scene, because Rabbi Melamed mentions him, and this whole machleket of how to deal with Reform Conservative. And it's not an easy topic. As I've explained, I've given you my point of view. I think what I would say to the Reform, to the Conservative, I hope I'm correct. But something happened that's beyond words. A Talmud listening in America, his name is Jake Sasson, Yaakov Sasson. He's a musmach of YU. He lives in Passaic. And we've been in touch many times over the years, could even be over the decade already. And he heard the shiur on Rabbi Shubo. And Shabbos morning, he's davening in the Kollel Avrechim in Rutherford. This is something to do with Passaic, Rutherford, what is that, an area there. And he looks up, and he sees a plaque of dedication in the Kollel. And one of the dedications by grandchildren for Rabbi Sholem Yosef Shubo and his wife. And he sees who dedicated it, and he tries to follow up who these people are, and he gets in touch with them. People helped him. It wasn't simple, because if I understand correctly, he went through the day school, and they already had children. They gave them a phone number or an email that was outdated, but finally he got an address, and he contacted the people at the address, and they were nice enough to tell Rabbi Sasson how to reach these people, what their new email or new phone number is. And here he writes to these grandchildren who dedicated this plaque. "Hello, Dr. Rabin. My name is Jake Sasson. I am a musmach of YU and live in Passaic. I often daven at the Kollel Avrechim on Rutherford. That's evidently a street. And I noticed on the plaque of dedication in the Kollel that one of those was dedicated by you and your wife for Grandfather Sholem Yosef Shubo. I began wondering if this is Rabbi Joseph Shubo from Boston, who was friendly with Rav Soloveitchik. With a bit of Googling, I found your wedding announcement from the New York Times, which made clear that Rabbi Shubo is your wife's grandfather. I was quite surprised and pleased to find that Rabbi Shubo has Orthodox grandchildren. Could I ask you how that came to be? Does he have other Orthodox descendants? And do you mind if I share this info with Rabbi Rakefet, who was a close Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik and often mentions his relationship with Rabbi Shubo? I am sure he will be thrilled that Rabbi Shubo has Orthodox grandchildren. He gets the following answer. Hi, Jacob. I am Rabbi Shubo's granddaughter. My grandfather was Shomer Shabbos, even though his congregation was conservative. He and the Rav were very close. In fact, the Rav gave his shloshim, meaning the shloshim hesped, which I have attached. I was there and heard it. I was 10 years old at the time. I obtained the copy from my friend Harvey Gertel, who lived in Boston for many years and whose father-in-law was Abe Lvovitz and very close to the Rav. Harvey got it from a Lichtenstein's wife in Israel. Now, I just want to mention Harvey Gertel happens to be my student from the 1960s, early 60s yet. And Abe Lvovitz, we spoke about, if I'm not mistaken, in yesterday's class. So we know the people. Excuse me. Baruch Hatorah. Oh, what am I doing? Excuse me. Harvey Gertel got them this hesped, fine. And she writes, in addition to Rabbi Soloveitchik, my grandfather was very close to the Boston Rebbe, who was Nifter a few years ago, and to the Boston Rebbe's father, and the Tolna Rebbe, that's Professor Twesky, and his father. And this was her grandfather. And she relates to the Boston Rebbe, writes about her grandfather. And then she goes on to describe her family. We have 5 children, all of whom now live in Israel and plan to remain there, and 8 grandchildren thus far. We ourselves are in the process of moving there. We sold our house in Clifton in order to buy an apartment in Jerusalem. We are now in a small apartment in Passaic until we leave, hopefully, at the end of this month. And now she's describing her children. These are great grandchildren of Rabbi Shubo. My oldest child, Bidi Deutsch, is the female marathon champion of Israel. And she sends a link. This is the lady that we all read about who married children, top runner, wants to participate in the Olympics, and is Charedit, underline the word. I believe she lives in Harnov. This is a great-granddaughter of Rabbi Shubo. My next child, Yosef Shalom, is named for my grandfather. He is about to finish Hebrew law school and lives in the Charedi Yishuv of Metzad. Charedi Yishuv. What does that tell you? Finishing law school, Charedi Yishuv. This is a great grandson of Rabbi Shubo. My next son, Yisrael, teaches and learns at the Diaspora Yeshiva in Jerusalem. That's a third great grandchild. My third son, Zev Moshe, learns in a Briska Kollel. Just think what we're talking about. My daughter is in medical school in the International Program of Ben Gurion in Be'er Sheva. All 3 sons spent years learning in Tel's Riverdale. So now I want to ask you, you come up with a story like this, what is the Ribbono Shel Olam saying to you? Keep the communication open. We gain nothing by pushing reform and conservative away. You can never tell them how far influence can go. When it's not that you compromise. You have to be clear. Without the Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha, the Jewish people will not succeed. We will not have a tomorrow. We will not be here. Don't need to be a great prophet to understand that. Just look at the Pooh report and look around you where there's observance. Just think for a minute that everyone grew up Hollywood. Who built Hollywood? No, I want to know, who built Hollywood? The Irish immigrants? The Italian immigrants? Hollywood built by one Jew after another. I don't think there was even one exception. Maybe one, when the original Hollywood, the studios, the movies, the 1920s, the 1930s, who built Hollywood? All Jews. Assimilation. Nothing is left. Do your research 80, 90 years later, how many Jewish descendants they have. God have mercy. What happens when you don't observe? We have to make the message clear. But keep the communication open. This story with Rabbi Shubel, overwhelming. Look at his grandchildren. Look at five great grandchildren living alat mata kodesh in so-called Haredi Yishuvim. No? Who else was Zaycha from Boston? Rabbi Melamed, you're in very good company when you quote the Rav and Rabbi Shubo. But there's something else here. Rabbi Shubo's granddaughter, who I'd love to meet one day, the mother of Bidi Deutsch, who was famous, even I recognize the name from the Israeli press and the Alonim. She got the Rav's Hesped, Shloshim, for Rabbi Shubo. I'm holding it in front of me. My dear students, this is vintage Rabbi Soloveitchik. It is overwhelming. The English, the insight, the depth, the description, the understanding, the relationship, it is beyond words. If anyone wants a copy of this eulogy, it's very simple. Yomo 613 at what comes next?
gmail.com.
Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Yomo613@gmail.com. And prepare yourself for an unbelievable treat. Quintessential Moria Rebbe. Overwhelming. Wait till you see the night the Rav's wife died, his description there. You'll cry for hours, but that's life. It's an honest description. Unfortunately, we're not angels, we're humans. Well, listening to me right now in Brooklyn is Mark Licht. And Mark Licht is getting all upset, all excited. What's the Rebbe talking about? Rebbe, you forgot a Gemara. Gemara that you taught us. The Gemara, no, Tano de Achnayi. Bab Mitzia, Dachnun Ted. Lo Bashamayim he. Ribbono Shel Olam, I just paskined a very difficult shaila. I just took total issue with the cherem against Board of Rabbis, Synagogue Council, 1956. I just sided with my Rebbe, and I'm telling you, Gilui Eliyahu, and Mark Licht is saying, Rebbe, what are you talking about? Lo b'shamayim here. I don't have to repeat the Gemara. I should know it by heart. But God tried to intervene. Rabbi Lezer, remember the Hom Machloket, the Tanur di Achnai, Tara, Tamei. And they tell God, butt out. Good question. What do you say? What do you say? Noah, good question, yes or no? Yeah, but you're missing something I told you over the decades. Of all the talks the Rav gave, of all the talks, the one that had the greatest influence on me and enabled me to go through life in dignity and understanding was a little talk he gave at the Mizrahi convention, annual convention. Many years ago, the talk was published first in Yiddish, the language he gave it in, then in English, and first in Yiddish, then in Hebrew. I believe the Hebrew translation came first, and then it was translated into English as well. I think they're two different translations of the talk, actually. And that talk raises this very question. The talk is called Yosef the Echav. How do we know who was right? Yosef was having a big machloket with his brothers. The whole question, what do we do in Egypt? How do we prepare for tomorrow? And the Rav said, when it comes to halacha, Mark Licht is absolutely right. He heard that from a guy named Rav Kefet many, many times. God does not mix in. Either you give the Torah to humans or you don't give it. But once you give it, you have to let it function in a human fashion. And humans will determine what the halacha is, not God. But when it comes to hashkafa, there it's just the opposite, the Rav said. There you can have machlokes from today to tomorrow. But you have to look up and see who is right. What does God want? And if that's the case, you absolutely have to allow for divine intervention. And that's the Rav explained how he became a Mizrahiite. His family took the attitude, Agudat Yisrael, I don't want to give the whole drasha now, took the attitude of the brothers of Yosef. Why are you worried about tomorrow? Don't be worried. Don't be concerned. Let God worry about it. Yosef said, no, we have to do our share. We have to get ready. Otherwise, we'll be swallowed up by the Egyptian culture. And you look around, thank God for Yosef, or we would not be here today. And God tells us Yosef was correct. This was the machloket, the Mizrahi and the Agudat Yisrael. And look at us after World War II, after Hitler, where would we be if not for Zionism and Israel and the state? God intervenes and tells us Mizrahi was right. Exactly the same here. This story with Rabbi Shubo, wow, what a story. Look at these five great-grandchildren. And could you imagine 100 years from now how many descendants Rabbi Shubo will have al Admat HaKodesh, Shomrei Torah Mitzvot? How many other Rabbanim in Boston, in the greater Boston area, Yitzchak? I don't want to mention names. How many other Rabbanim will have that same schut that Rabbi Shubo had? Wow. So here you have an answer from on high. And imagine when they publicized about B.D. Deutsch, halavai, they would have said, no one can appreciate it, but I would have danced a kazatska had I seen in parentheses, this is the great-granddaughter of Rabbi Yosef Shubo. We can say about him, Zeche Tzadik Levracha, who zacha to something that many others lo zachu. Okay. Ad kan, I hope with Rabbi Melamed, I have a problem. I sent them all the material. The only question is, it's in English. So I got back a beautiful acknowledgement from his assistant, and he told me the Rav doesn't read English, but early this week I'll sit down with him and explain what it's all about. But wow, if he publishes this, it certainly serves as an achachasimach, a strong support for what he does. Okay, now let's come back to Torah V'das. There's no question that Mr. Mendelovich, who takes over the reins, is very innovative. A school begins, all right, Rabbi Gold played a big role, Zev Gold, and the school begins in Brooklyn, and time marches on, and they bring in Mr. Shraga Feigelman Lovitch, who had been in Scranton, had come to America from Hungary, and he was very innovative. The man was constantly thinking and planning and doing. And you saw he, and we'll come into it in great detail, but he never stopped in enhancing the school. A high school, a Beit Medrash. Later, you have a kollel, one of the earliest kollelim in America, if not the first kollel, Beit Medrash Elyon, in Spring Valley. He's the first one, this is right before World War II, or right at the start of World War II, comes up with a special program to train teachers, Eish Dat. It was a famous program, we'll talk about it, and that was all his innovation. Some of the finest graduates of Torah V'das were also graduates of the Eish Dat program, Eish Dat Lamo. And he comes up with, do you need a tissue? And please. And constantly, and then of course Torah Mesorah, which you can't put a price on for what Torah Mesorah did. It may even be Mr. Mendelovich's greatest achievement. So he never stops innovating, never stops planning, never stops adding to the Torah V'das general achievements, outreach, teaching programs. Now, over the years, I just want to mention some of the Torah V'das graduates. And you'll notice I'm taking this from Wikipedia. This is not from Artsgrove. So it's much more balanced. You'll notice how deep the connection was to Yeshiva University. In the 20s, the 30s, into the 40s, continuing into the 50s, a good deal of the Torah V'das students, many of them later continued on at Yeshiva College. And you find here Saul Berman. Rabbi Saul Berman, my classmate, was a Torah V'das graduate in high school, then came on to Yeshiva College. Benjamin Blech was a Talmud Mufak of the Rav afterwards, written so many Svarim, Yeshiva College. His start was Torah V'das. J. David Bleich, the YU Rosh Yeshiva, the man who's written more Torah for Tradition Magazine than anyone else in the world. Torah V'das high school graduate. Shlomo Lekalbach, all right? He's a Torah V'das high school graduate. Shlomo, all right? Interesting individual to say the least, who attracts a lot of attention today. I'm still one of the few people who knew all these people quite intimately. Shlomo Kalbach, Dovi Hartman, the Rebbetzin. This was our generation. We grew up in their shadow. The Boston Rebbe, Levi Yitzchak Horowitz, Teira Vadas graduate, Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, Rosh Yeshiva of Philadelphia, Teira Vadas graduate, Aryeh Kaplan, the great thinker, the author of so many books, died young, interestingly enough, rabbi in a conservative synagogue, and Teira Vadas graduate, Shlomo Kless, publisher of the Jewish Press, Rabbi Klass, the man who gave Meir Kahana Panossa in America, Torah Vadas graduate, Rabbi Norman Lamb, later president, chancellor, Yeshiva University, Torah Vadas graduate, Beru Levi, O.K. Kashrit, Chabad Chassid, Torah Vadas graduate, Yeruchim Olshin, right, the cousin of Rabbi Olshin of Tirat Shraga, Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, Torah Vadas graduate, the sweetest human being alive, Rabbi Avram Pam, later Torah Vadas Rosh Yeshiva, it's a Torah Vadas graduate. What the world doesn't know is that Rabbi Pam, the first year after he graduated high school, went to Yeshiva College, but he found the commute too hard. So he stayed in Brooklyn, and he went to, I believe it was Brooklyn College, where he got his degree in mathematics. And you can go on and on. Nassim Sherman, the art scroll, Teira Vadas graduate, Rabbi Gedalia Shaw, later Rosh Yeshiva of Teira Vadas graduate, Rabbi Moshe Heinemann, knew the Star K, right or wrong, the Hashgacha, Philadelphia, Teira Vadas graduate, Rebellion Tzvei, Rosh Yeshiva, Philadelphia, Teira Vadas graduate, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, Rosh Yeshiva Nei Yisrael, Rabbi Uderman's son-in-law, Teira Vadas graduate. Among the prominent graduates, they list one name where I'll need your help in telling me who we're talking about. Gene Simons. Originally, his name is Chaim Witz, W-I-T-Z, a.k.a., also known as The Demon, co-founder of the rock band Kiss, K-I-S-S. Can anyone tell me what the rock band Kiss is all about? I looked it up, I Googled it.
They're good.
Tell me, is the Epis Yiddish, is there anything Jewish in them?
No.
Not much, you say?
One second.
Gene Simons, did he remain a firm Jew? Does anyone know?
How did you find from?
Did you see a picture of him?
What?
Did you see a picture of Kiss?
I saw his picture. We'll put it this way. Even Torah Vadas has not succeeded with all its graduates, and we'll let it stand at that. Okay. But it's interesting. You see, the Wikipedia list is uncensored. That's what made it much more interesting than what you'll find in Art Scroll publications. First of all, as you know, the YU graduates are left out. And secondly, Gene Simons, Chaim Witz, etc. We also had fellows who went to Yeshiva Salanta, what they became. I can give you one example who was there in my time. He's a year or two younger than I am. Lifshitz, Ralph Lifshitz. That's Laurent. That's women's, God have mercy, let me not give him any publicity. But he went to Yeshiva Salanta. We had Salanta. Listen, this is the reality. This is America. And this is what happens. We can't sweep it under the carpet. We have to be proud of those of us that survived and went further. We'll put it that way. All right. Now, let's talk about Rav Shraga Feivel. And let's talk about what became unique about Torah Vidas? And here I'm quoting from the biography on Reb Shraga Feivel. And remember, it's an obscure biography. There are lines here which I don't believe are historically correct. But one thing is for sure. He had no one to guide him. He's building a high school in America. He's more to the right of Yeshiva University. He cannot take the example of Talmudical Academy and say, let's follow it brick by brick, word by word. This is Torah Vidas, this is Brooklyn. There was a lot of pressure on him by the parents. They would have been very, very happy to have seen Torah Vidas open a college. And that's what I've spoken about many times in the past. I'll just allude to it now. You can read about it in Revel. He was very hesitant to open a college because I'll tell you what the difference is between a high school and a college. A high school is very conservative yet with a small C. It's a curriculum. A curriculum that can be controlled, a curriculum that has limits. You're not going to knock down the walls of the Capitol building in Washington on a high school level, at least not in the 1920s, 1930s. A college curriculum is already liberal arts. It's much wider, much broader. And he corresponded with Europe. These are the famous tshuvot from Rabbi Baruch Ber, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. And he was advised by the Europäische Rosh Yeshiva not to open a college. All right, so what happened in reality in Torah Vidas was students did go to college. They went to college at night, they went to college in the evening, they went to college during the summer. And they got college degrees, whether it took 4 years or 5 years. It was a small price to pay for being able to learn in Torah Vidas. And that's the way Torah Vidas began to function, continued to function. And even today, so many decades later, to a great extent, Torah Vidas still functions the same way. What's interesting is that after World War II, when the yeshivas expanded, when there were endless immigrants in the United States, when people were frum, Mr. Mendelovich came up with the idea, well, we'll talk about this later, but he and Rabbi Huttner wanted to open up a joint college in Brooklyn for the yeshivot. And they already had a charter from the state. Much has been written about this, as you know. And Rabbi Aaron Cutler vetoed it, nixed it. But you see, Mr. Mendelovich was never opposed to college. He understood that in America it's a necessity, but he worried about what a college education might lead students to. Today, the yeshiva world has a miracle, and this is due to Bernie Lander, and all you know from Lander College, Touro, its various divisions, Machon LaParnassah. Today, any yeshiva graduate can wind up getting a bachelor's and getting a master's and getting ahead in life and having Parnassah and high tech and accountancy, and many of them wind up in law school, and everything is done outside the walls of the yeshiva proper. But with the greater Touro institutions, there is nothing anti-Torah in getting these degrees. So ultimately, this is what happened with Torah Vidas, this is what happened with most American yeshivot, and this was, I would say, when you look at it in retrospect, a fallout of Yeshiva College. Bernie Lander was a Yeshiva College graduate. He took it a few steps further, and Baruch Hashem, the so-called right-wing Yeshiva world, benefits from Bernie Lander, his relationship with Rabbi Revel, Yeshiva College, and all that goes with it. Now, In Theravadas, there was a very unique feeling that Mr. Mendelovich developed. And this is what I want to devote today's shiur to. And this is unique. Why you, when all is said and done, or Yeshivas Kol Chanan, when all is said and done, was the Litvisha experience in American context? When I entered the yeshiva in 1951, I can tell you it was a fabulous feeling to be able to breathe Lithuanian air. You came into Amsterdam Avenue, the minute you closed the door behind you, everything was in Yiddish, and there walking through the hallway, a little American kid, you were exposed to Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, Reb Mendel Zaks, the Tzuvalka Rav, Reb David Lifshitz, Reb Chaim Brisker's grandson, Mori Urebi, Reb Soloveitchik, wherever you turned, it was Lithuania. There was no Hasidus. There was no Hasidus. There was Musa, yes, Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson. There was Musa, it was on a level, Slabotka, Gatlat Adam, and all that goes with it. But again, there was no Hasidus. I can tell you, to a certain degree, Zemnach Abgelach, they laughed at Hasidus. It was the Lithuanian tradition, Hasidim, Amayarets, Boer, Eini Yurechei, don't know what they're doing, Davening Shalom Bizman, only the Rav, I have to say, the Rav already had a much more positive attitude towards Hasidus, as you know, from his own background, going up in Chaslevich, and it came across in his lectures. But why you, Lithuanian in American context? Theravadas, Mr. Mendelovich, who himself was of Hasidic background, Hungarian background, he insisted that in Theravadas there has to be a Hasidic overtone. He called it the Pintle Hasidut. And later in life, in his last will and testament, he made his children and those that inherited him, they would made them promise they would always keep that pintle of Hasidut, not to chase it away, not to nude it, not to abrogate it. It has to be a little different. A shtickle of varim type. And this is why when Theravadas, when you study the history of Brooklyn, it intermingles with Hasidus. Whatever Rebbeim came to Brooklyn, they picked up students from Theravadas. I have news for you. Chabad picked up many of the original kids who wound up Chabadnikim, who were nothing to do with Chabad from their home. These were Torah Vadas boys. You can name one by one. Bistritsky, Label Bistritsky, is a Torah Vadas boy. Benjamin Berulevi, OU, is a Torah Vadas boy. Shlomo Kalbach, a Torah Vadas boy. They always had this little drive, the pintala, the point, the heart, the feeling, and that was a very big difference between what becomes Yeshiva University and what remains Misifta Theravadas. Now, I want to quote Mr. Mendelovich. Mr. Mendelovich was conquering America. Again, he was standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Revel. Those of you that have seen Rakal Ferraro and Chelik Dalad, you'll see what I published there about Mr. Mendelovich and his relationship with Rabbi Revel. By the way, the person who wrote this book, he was shown what I published, the document, and people told me he was looking at it and shaking. He couldn't like it. This is real. This is real. You know, he couldn't believe it. And Mr. Mendelovich was standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Revel, but he was inaugurating. It was a little different. America, Mr. Mendelovich said, would produce a new Jew combining within himself the best elements of Europe, the Lithuanian intellectual acuity, the bren, warmth of Hasidut, the organizational abilities of German Jewry, and the appreciation of Hida Mitzvah of the Hungarians. In other words, he already had a very broad vision. This was not just like Rabbi Revel and the Meshiter and Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, who were pure Lithuanians. He wanted to bring in the best of Lithuania, the best of Hasidus, best of German Orthodoxy, the best of Hungarian Orthodoxy, and this was his goal in Theravadas. How much did he succeed? Well, there's no question that Theravadas totally, all the years, had a Hasidic presence. Today it's certainly much more noticeable, but even in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, you didn't see students in what becomes YU walking around with payas and tzitzitbis sticking out and dreisen and payas and beards. In Theravadas, you had that. Not everyone, not the majority at that time, but it was already there in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s. Now, if this is correct, we have a very interesting question. Why didn't Mr. Mendelovich bring in Hasidic Gedolim to teach in Theravadas? And the truth is, there's a footnote here on page 95 of Rosenblum's biography, Reb Shraga Feifel. Page 95, there's a footnote, and he doesn't back it up, but the sources are. I would be curious. That ain't hachinami. Mr. Mendelovich attempted to bring in Reb Menachem Zemba. Reb Menachem Zemba, could you imagine what that would have done for the United States, what it would have done for Theravadas? Reb Menachem Zemba was a Chassidish Jew from Warsaw, and Agon Shebegainim. Agon Shebegainim. And he perished in the uprising in 43. A lot has been written about him. He didn't want to come to America. But according to this biography, Mr. Mendelovich went after him. He went after the Chibina Rav, Reb Dov Beresh Wiedenfeld. You have to know the Chibina Rav, the Gaon Sheba Gaonim. The knowledge of these people was earth-shaking. They knew Kol HaTorah Kula backwards and forwards. Ripani Shalalim. The Chibina Rav too, he couldn't get him to come to America. Later he survives by being exiled to Siberia. And he survived, like, you know, the story of anyone exiled to Siberia when they were being exiled. They were crying and looked at the Jews remaining behind in Vilna, how lucky they are in Kovna. And anyone who remained behind was killed by Hitler. And anyone exiled, if your body could survive the cold of Siberia, you survived the war. And then you were able to get out. They repatriated the Polish citizens from Siberia back to Poland, and many of them back to Israel, Baruch Hashem. So he did try, but ultimately all the Rashi Yeshiva, almost without exception, in Theravadas were Lithuanian products or influenced by their own Lithuanian teachers. And Theravadas on that level was basically no different than Yeshiva Scripts' Kochanan. Reb Aaron Cutler, when he came to America and he got to know Mr. Mendelovich, he expressed amazement that Mr. Mendelovich, a product of Hungarian Yeshiva, and nevertheless, Hasidic background, Hungarian background, nevertheless, his teachers were all Lithuanian Russian yeshiva. And their seems to be a trend here. And now with great joy, I'm going to show you how Mr. Mendelovitz and Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, later a yeshiva of Torah Vadas, and Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik were in total agreement. And this seems to be the underlying theme. You can pick it up in Rosenblum's biography. You can, page 97, he quotes Reb Yaakov, and I'll give you sources on the Rav. And here, let me explain what I'm talking about. The old days in Europe, when Eli grew up in a little shtetl, so you didn't go to high school, you didn't go to college. You sat and learned. You were not exposed to any other thought systems. So whichever way they taught you, Binyamin, they taught you Aleph Bet, Gimel Dalet, to repeat, to quote, you were satisfied, you were happy. Now you come into the American world where a kid goes to high school. The minute you go to high school, you're exposed to many other systems of thought. Mathematics, chemistry, biology. Social sciences also have an impact, although I would agree with those who will tell me social science is more impact on agada, hashkafa. There's a lot of truth to it. Then you go on to college. College, it's all thought. How do we have vaccines? I'm not feeling perfect. And my daughter called this morning and she read me a long list of people who have had the vaccines and have had a negative, to a certain degree, response. And she explained to me, she just spoke with there's a world-class doctor who my children are friends with from South Africa, happens to have been world-famous in his field. He's an older man today, but he headed up the department at Shaarei Tzedek, and he davens, my son-in-law has been president of a shul for maybe 40 years now. So let's put it this way, the shul runs because of my son-in-law. So they're very close to this doctor, and he said, I don't have a reaction. He said, the people who have a reaction, it's a sign the vaccine has affected them. And if you don't have a reaction, it's a sign you just swallowed a sugar-coated tablet. And how do we know this? Imagine the vision, the insight, the knowledge, the thinking goes into a vaccine that you know what to do. Take it a little further. Look at the computer. Some of the best minds that helped develop everything we have today is a result of kids who went to yeshiva in their youth. Plain and simple. Mori Tarragon, there's an example. What about Noah Privis, Professor Privis, a yeshiva boy who conquered the world 1,000 times over afterwards? He's now dedicating, he's just died, he didn't live to see the dedication. They refurbished the auditorium at Heichal Shlomo in memory of his kid, in memory of his older brother who was killed by the British. And at his older brother's funeral, I think 20,000 people attended. It was the late 30s to show their protest against the British. And thank God, so many years later, his brother, who did so well, and this is all thinking, intellectualism, a thought process. Well, my dear students, it all goes back to Reb Chaim Brisker. What Reb Chaim innovated, we think, we analyze, we clarify, we give names to, Gavra, Chetze, Shnei Dinim, Din Echad, different Dinim, Din, a specific concept or a universal concept. What Reb Chaim did, he made the Gemara part of the most modern, sophisticated legal system. And today, where our youth goes to high school, goes to college, goes to graduate school, where our youth is exposed to all this thinking, we can hold on to them because our way of thinking, teaching, analyzing is not any less than the most sophisticated intellectual modern concept in any university. And believe it or not, on this level, Yeshiva Shep Yitzchol Chanun and Teira V'Das blend into one. And here I'm quoting Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's attitude towards the so-called Brisket Derech, which swept the Lithuanian yeshiva in the later decades of the 19th century, was close to that of Rabbi Shraga Feivel's. Though Rabbi Yaakov himself was critical of the overemphasis on Lumdus at an early age, he nevertheless saw in the revolution in the method of learning in Lithuanian yeshivas the workings of Hashgacha Pratit. In modern times, said Reb Yaakov, it was necessary to give students the sheer intellectual pleasure and joy of learning in order to combat the many outside influences that compete for their attention. Students who had experienced the excitement of learning in depth, he felt, would find themselves less attracted to secular studies. And that's Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky quoted in the volume on Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. And on that level, Teira V'Das, allowing for Hasidic overtones, allowing for Hasidic pinnings, allowing for the Pintala Hasidut. But when it came to learning, their Rashi Yeshiva read like a who's who in giants, either of the Lithuanian Yeshiva themselves or students of Lithuanian giants. And here we come to the Tzad HaShaveh, to the equation, this theme that Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky just expressed was expressed by the Rav time and again. Let me quote to you from the volume, The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, volume 1, beginning on page 193. And here, it's a lecture the Rav gave at the RCA Midwinter Conference, February 7th, 1968. And the Rebbe is discussing, I'll read the first part to you. I'm trying to think whether the Rebbe, I think this lecture was originally given in English, because I don't say here that I translated it from the Yiddish, and I think by 68 already, his RCA talks were now in English, not in Yiddish. You know that I was born into a rabbinic house. I am not boasting, since it was not my accomplishment. I was cast into a rabbinic house without having been consulted. And the Rav goes on to describe his family, and you know, there was no greater Baal Chesed than my grandfather. And he describes Reb Chaim Brisker, his great Chassidus, the Chesed he did, and he says, yes, people felt that this was the dominant feature of Reb Chaim's personality. In my opinion, as a Chesed personality, Reb Chaim towered above his intellectual personality. He was truly great intellectually, and you know very well that Reb Chaim completely revolutionized our approach to the study of rabbinic texts. It would be impossible in America to disseminate knowledge of Torah among young boys who are also being trained in secular subjects. And let me just pause for a second. This is the Rav speaking. It's almost word by word what Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said. And the Rav is talking that my grandfather was very big intellectually, he was bigger Baal Chesed. But we're not interested in that aspect now. What does the Rav mean? It would be impossible. In order to compete with secular study, you must present to the young man in the yeshiva a method which is as precise and as exact as any method employed by modern logic, formal logic, or mathematical logic. Otherwise, if the student finds the Lundet method obsolete and primitive, he will not continue his Torah studies. The fact is that very many students continue their Torah studies with dedication, devotion, and commitment. I greatly admire these individuals. All this proves one thing, that our methodology does not lag behind the finest modern methodologies of the scientific world. And this was the creation of my Zayda, Reb Chaim. And here you have a statement. Wow. Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, word by word. And the Rav, this theme is something that the Rav stressed time and time again. Here, I'll give you another example. Quoting from the Rav, Volume 1, page 197. This was a talk, this was, in my humble opinion, this was the last talk that the Rav gave when he still was in total strength. Afterwards, this talk is May 22nd, 1979. It's the Benjamin Gottesman Lecture in Jewish Thought and the Tanya Soloveitchik Memorial Lecture. It was given in memory of Benjamin Gottesman, which evidently was an endowed lecture by the Gottesman family. It's the great uncle of Mendel who's listening, am I right? Or do I have it right? Your grandfather was Herman. And yes, so it would be your great uncle. It's Herman's brother Benjamin. And it was in memory of the Rebbe's wife, May 22nd, 1979. And the Rebbe starts talking about the role of a Kohen, the role of a rabbi. I want you to understand, we have many stories about Rabbanim of old. Germany had its stories, Lithuania had its stories, and so forth. These stories do not revolve only around their scholarship. Yes, we have many stories that stress the scholarship of the Rabbanim, but this is not the main topic that has motivated us to tell stories about Rabbanim. The main topic motivating these stories was the sensitive conscience and sense of judgment that the rabbi possessed. And then he goes on to talk about his grandfather and his chesed, and he said, yes, this was the greatest part of him, But there's no doubt that he had, that Reb Chaim possessed great intellectual ability. In my opinion, he was one of the greatest intellects who lived at the turn of the last century, not only among Jews, but among Gentiles. His intellect was tremendous. Had he been a philosopher or a scientist in any field, he would have changed the particular discipline completely. I will tell you frankly, this commands respect, but it is not the main trait of Reb Chaim. Yes, it is true that he had an excellent head. He was a genius, no doubt about it. He was an abstract thinker and a revolutionary as far as the interpretation of halakha is concerned. He revolutionized the halakha. My father once told me that if it were not for Reb Chaim, there would have been no possibility of teaching halakha to modern young men who had a good training in science. Reb Chaim made it possible to teach halakha to anyone, even those who are advanced in logical analysis. They will find that the halakha is just as exalted and perhaps just as abstract as the most advanced mathematical, logical, analytical logic. And there again, you have a very distinct description of Reb Chaim, of this method, of Lithuania, and why it is so crucially important for Jewish boys. And at this level, Yeshiva Shtetl Chochanan and Yeshiva Teira V'Das fall exactly under the same roof. These are kids in high school. These are kids going to college. Give them a chance to learn Shas and Paiskim and understand the analysis. It is equal to any philosophical system in the world today. Yes, Ellie.
Yes, we really grew up in it.
Wait, I can't tell.
Because I, let's say, at least really grew up in it. This style of learning and system of learning. I read this line in your book, and I didn't understand what it was like beforehand. So I couldn't fully appreciate it. Would you be able to explain what it was like before Chaim came? All I know is what came after.
Bruch atod ha-melech olam she'kong yimed at all. I thought you were starting to ask me, you pointed to your wife, that today the girls also have to learn like this because they're going to high school, they're going to college, they're getting graduate school degrees. Look, what came before, I'll give you a simple example. Going to a Hasidic yeshiva. Look what they're learning. A kid 12 years old, 13 years old is learning Masechet Chulin. A kid 14, 15 is learning Masechet Shabbos. They're learning it. Their whole thrust is halacha l'maisa. It's a Hasidic world of understanding. It's not the Lithuanian analysis. It's, yes, they want to cover ground. They want to finish the Masechet. They want to make a siyum. And halacha l'maisa, many of these kids are going to become sheikhtim, are going to become baitkim, are going to become be involved with how do they make a living, how do they make panosa. I've said more than once, the OU is the greatest gift to the Haredi world. You need mashkichim. People, what? We have degrees, we work, we're lawyers, we're doctors, we're dentists, etc. We don't want to leave our house for 4 months a year. Take the Hasidic world, they don't have degrees. So, hashgacha, they're involved, Thailand, China. How many factories in China are under hashgacha today? Where do you get the mashgichim, etc.? It's a different type of learning. The analysis plays little role in it. The halacha, a major role. Yes, it'd be a machlokes ha-paiskim, how do you paskin? How, who lines up on what side, you count heads. It's not going to be an approach that the lumdus totally wins out. Do we put tefillin on Cholamoid? If you take a Hasidic approach, all right, you're going to add up. Is it Juntif? Isn't it Juntif? What do the Paiskim say? Take the Litvisher approach. Is there Kedusha Tayom? What type of Kedusha Tayom? Is it Kedusha Tayom with Hetta Malacha? Or is it a day of Chulin with Kaban Musaf? You understand? It's you're coming in on two different areas. So that when you talk about Reb Chaim and the revolution, Reb Chaim revolutionized the study of Gemara. Not everyone agreed with Reb Chaim. Some people felt, I don't want to go further. I once got a shaila, I'm not telling you true stories, but I guess at my age I can tell them all. I suddenly get a shaila here in Israel. Something happened in New York. The Rav, a kid, mentioned the Ritbaz in the Rav's class. And the Rav got hysterical. I don't want to repeat what I was told the Rav said because I wasn't there, but pretty sharp words. So they turned to me, Rebbe, we know you know about the Rav and the Ritbaz. You published postdoctoral. I did. I published my first piece of postdoctoral research was on the Ritbaz. I actually won a prize for it. It's, if you look at the JPS yearbook, it's listed as one of the most important pieces. Baruch Hashem. So I said to them, let me let you in on a little secret. In the introduction to his Sefer, one of his early Svarim, the Ritbaz rips the heck out of Reb Chaim. He calls him the chemist. No, you didn't hear that. He calls him the chemist. What did Reb Chaim do? Noach, he was upset with Reb Chaim that Reb Chaim, like a chemist, takes apart the ingredients, H2O, hydrogen, oxygen, and he was upset with Reb Chaim. He said this, and he ripped it apart, this whole new method of learning. He said no more than sophistry. You follow? Okay. Now you can understand why the Rav got a little bit upset when you quoted the Ritbaz in class. Ariane, where you come from, you should know who the Ritbaz was. Rabbeinu Shalalem, tell me why. The Ritbaz, who we taught, Rabbi Yaakov David Ben Zev Volovsky, who came to Chicago to become the chief rabbi there. We're talking 1902, 1903. And by 1904, they say he got on a train with his wife and children on Shabbos to run to New York. Do you know why? Because Friday afternoon, his enemies, he was trying to establish Hashgacha on a proper level. The mafia locked them in to the frozen part, the deep freeze where they had the bodies of the cows there. That's where they locked him in, hoping he would asphyxiate. By some miracle, he got, this is family legend, but believe me, they wouldn't make up these stories about me or about Ellie. There has to be truth to it. And he got out Friday night, got home like 2 a.m., and that next morning they were on the train to New York. Pikuach nefesh, that's what they say. I've been asked the question, did he really get on the train on Shabbos? I don't know. I do know, some of you know, I do, if you read Washington, I do, I have a relationship with his family until today as a result of that postdoctoral research. But I've often asked them, is it true? Isn't it true? They say, we don't know, just like you don't know, we don't know. But all of us agree, there has to be some truth to it. But there was machlokes, this was the machlokes, this was the opposition. The chemica, you'll see the words, the chemist. So I would advise, if we could go back in time, and the Rav would be giving shir, I would advise his students, don't mention the Ritbaz in class. Baruch Hashem, let it hang fire, but don't mention the Ritbaz. Okay, let me go one step further. But that was a good question, Ellie. And Einach Inami was a proper answer that I gave you, an honest answer. You can check it out. There was opposition. And there, until today, you go into some Hasidic yeshiva and you'll say something about Rav Chaim Mevetzich Oislach. And you understand what he did, intellectual, pilpul, deep thought, analyzing, taking apart halacha lemaisa. Just learn and the halach is what counts, and we don't have to analyze. But a kid who goes to graduate school, believe me, this is very important. And again, the Rav boasts again, this is in volume 2 of the Rav, on page 2002. And this is the famous talk that the Rav gave in 1975 against Rabbi Rachman. It's the famous talk on Geirut given in First Hall of Yeshiva University. And the Rav here is the heart of the talk. Therefore, for me, the study of Torah has never been simply a formal religious duty that mandates an intellectual act of performance. The satisfaction I derive from it is much more than the fulfillment of a mitzvah alone. It is true, regardless of how important the role the intellect plays in the study of Torah. You know very well that I place very much, a great deal of emphasis upon the intellectual understanding and analysis of the halacha. You know that this is actually what my grandfather Reb Chaim introduced. You know, and I can tell you, and I've told it to you so many times, and I will tell it to you again, our methodology, our analysis, our manner of conceptualizing, inferring, classifying, and defining concepts of halachic matter do not lag behind the most modern philosophical analysis. I happen to know something about modern philosophical analysis. We are far ahead of it because the tools we employ to analyze a Talmudic discussion are the most modern. The logical tools and the systemological implements which we employ in order to analyze a sugya or Talmudic subject for study, whether in Baba Kama or any portion of Shas, are the most modern. They are very impressive. My grandfather had a great share in this achievement. Anyway, we avail ourselves of the most modern methods of understanding, abstracting, inferring, classifying, defining, and so forth and so on. Yes, there is no doubt that the intellect plays a tremendous role in this study of Torah. And then the Rav goes on, and of course, you know what's involved here, that it's not just intellect, there has to be emotion, there has to be commitment, and he takes deep issue with Rabbi Rachman. But on this level, the Rav, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky, and everything that we've mentioned, like a glove and a hand, they merge into one. Now, Mr. Mendelovich may have had these dreams of bringing over Hasidic Gedolim. He didn't succeed. But the first great Lithuanian Gadol that he did bring was Reb David Leibovich Leibowitz. Those of you that come from Kew Gardens Hills should recognize the name immediately. Chafetz Chaim Yeshiva, Reb Chanuch Leibowitz, his son. This is who we're talking about. This is Reb David. This is Reb David, a nephew of the Chafetz Chaim. This is Reb David Leibovich, who studied with his uncle in Radin, later studied in Slabodka with Reb Natan Zvi Finkel, the Mashkiach, and came to America 1926 to become the Rosh Yeshiva at Mesifta Teru Vidas. Now, I'm not going to finish it today, but this is very, very important. And here I want you to understand what was going on uptown had to be emulated in Brooklyn. People have choice. In the 1920s, the difference between a Teira Vadas boy and Yeshiv Sitzel Chanan boy was very little. It's not like today, when the average kid coming into YU is very different, both in background, outlook, commitment, understanding, than the kid coming into Teira Vadas. In the 20s, there was real competition. YU, Rabbi Revel, my cousin, had achieved his dream in 1922. He brought the Meitzer Te'ili to America. For the first time in America, you had a first grade Rosh Yeshiva teaching Rav Shlomo Palachek, the Meitzer Te'ili. Teira Vadas, with all due respect to Mr. Mendelovich, he organizes the Mesifta, he organizes the Beis Medrash program, but he was not a Gaon Adir on the level of the Mechita. So they bring Reb David Leibovich. Reb David catches on. Beloved students gather around him. They have an answer to the Mechita. They have Reb David Leibovich. Slabodka. What more could you ask for? Talmud Mufak of Reb Natan Zvi Finkel. Nephew of the Chafetz Chaim. What more could you ask for? And another point, very important, a personality who quickly adapted to the United States. He was not a greenhorn very long. Okay. Teira Vadas is on the map, is happy, has a Rosh Yeshiva, and everyone in the surroundings, you have something tangible, high school, post-high school program, and a Rosh Yeshiva, a Lamdin, a Litvisha. Tremendous schism, chasm, break took place. And here I have to tell you that 20, 30, 40 years later, I was very friendly with Teira Vadas people. They still felt the pain of what happened. Machloikis, Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, and Reb David Leibowitz. Machloikis that 1933 exploded, and Reb David left. You don't know what a source of heartache this was. And here I want to state something, and I'm not going to go into great detail because there's no need. Over the decades, Teira Vadas always had some deep politics that did not exist at Yeshiva Strip Skolchan. In other words, what happened here with Rabbi Leibowitz leaving, moving out, founding Chafetz Chaim, moving on. It gave birth like an overture, like an overtone to all the years of Teira Vadas. Great Rashi Yeshiva, But there always was inner politics. I can quote and tell you in 1962, YU doubled in size. Why did YU double in size? First Hall opened. When First Hall opened, suddenly there were many, many more classrooms. Because there were many more classrooms, they were able to take in many more students. In order to take in many more students, you needed more teachers. And in 1962, four rebbeim were appointed to the yeshiva faculty. Uptown. Among them was a guy named Rothkopf. Among them was Rabbi Louis Isbe, I-S-B-E-E. Rabbi Louis Isbe was the brother-in-law of Rabbi Gedalia Shaw, who was then Teira Vadas Rosh Yeshiva. And Rabbi Louis Isbe was a Teira Vadas product, taught at Teira Vadas, and he jumped ship from Brooklyn to YU. And Rabbi Isbe and I taught together till the day I went in Aliyah. Later I remained in touch with him. I actually taught his daughter in one of my early classes in Machon Gold. I don't believe she's alive anymore. He's not alive. A lot of people died young in that family. And I can tell you, Rabbi Isbe used to say to me daily, "Reb Aaron, you don't know how lucky you are to teach in YU." I'd look at him. He says, "You know what it means to teach? No politics. You walk in, you give your shiur, you deal with your students, you have no heartache, you walk out." And let me say, to the credit of Yeshiva University, I hope this is true until today. I don't know what goes on in Manhattan, in Uptown. But all my years affiliated with YU, there never was politics. We never had to take sides. We never suffered from inner machlokes. Now, it could be that YU, the reason is very simple. In my time, you had the Rav. The Rav's personality was dominant. No one differed with him. He was the Rav. No one would go public against the Rav. Yeah, you had in a little bit fighting the Rosh Yeshiva, a hin, a her, to use their Yiddish. But it could be that was part of it. Teira Vadas never had a so dominant personality that set the tone for the institution. It could be. Could be I'm wrong. But it is an absolute fact. The machloket with Rabbi Lvovitz. I still met Teira Vadas people 20, 30, 40 years later that had not recovered from the shock, the heartache of that machloket. And we have to ask a simple question. What was the machloket about, or at least what do we know, what do we think? My dear students, just think about it for 1 week from today when we will propose an answer. But on one hand, Rav David Leibovitz, the first Rosh Yeshiva, he caught on. On the other hand, even Rabbi Rosenblum, in his biography, cannot skip over the incident, Rabbi David Leibovitz's departure. Why? What was the machloket? What hurt? What couldn't be overcome? And you know what it means to leave an institution, 1933, we're talking about in the doldrums of the Depression, when money was very hard to come by, And here you're picking up, leaving, moving on. In retrospect, 80 years later, you say, Gamzu Letova, Baruch Hashem, we have today Teira Vadas, we have today Chafetz Chaim. Look at all the good that came out of it. But at that time, it was earth-shaking. So to reiterate, what have we done today? First of all, Anachnu Modim LaKadosh Baruch Hu, the halacha is like the Rav. Keep the channels of communication open. Please don't ask from the Gemara of Tanur the Achnai. Understand the Rav's talk, Yosef V'Echav, Baruch Hashem. Look up and see what God wants out of us. What is succeeding? What is not? And there you get the answer. Who is correct? The Ribbono Shel Olam rules. It's not halacha where man rules. Coming back to Teira Vadas, we did a brief review of many of their graduates, and we found it interesting. Gedolei Yisrael, all the way from Lakewood to Baltimore to YU, back to Teira Vadas, all graduates of Teira Vadas, some of them homegrown, as they say. Even the band, what's it called, Kiss? And, wow, Simon Witz, what's his original name? Chaim Witz, and what he became. So I have a feeling that even Teira Vadas doesn't win them all. I'm sure that YU has plenty of graduates that qualify for this list. Then we spoke about the learning at Teira Vadas, the Pintlich Siddis, and anyone who knows Teira Vadas history knows what I'm talking about. Mr. Mendelovich was very makpid. Nevertheless, he had to use Litvisha Rashi Yeshiva. And here Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky and the Rav speak exactly the same language. It's amazing. We blend into one. Ellie asked a wonderful question. What was it like learning before? And I told him the story with the Ritbaz, and that's a true story. How no one in America could answer why the Rav got upset. And after I gave my answer, I was the baked Ritbaz. I gave him the source, where to look. Wow, I became like a hero. All right, I knew it from my research. The chemist. That's the way he referred to Reb Chaim. All right, we'll pick up on Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, why we don't get drunk on Purim. I want to show you some interesting documents that came my way, and I'll show you a tremendous problem with archival material. This is a wedding invitation, November 1959. We take pleasure in inviting you to celebrate with us the marriage of our children, Tova and Aharon. The wedding will take place on Tuesday evening, December 22nd, 1959, at 6 o'clock in the Dorothy Quincy Suite of the John Hancock Building, etc., Boston, Massachusetts. Signed, Joseph and Tanya Soloveitchik, Yechiel and Bluma Lichtenstein. So, Benjamin, you're doing your research, right? And you see this document. When did the Lichtensteins get married? December 22nd, 1959. Noach, any comment? False. But you see, this is where you wouldn't know this in a million years. I showed it to my wife, and then she said, no, they got married in March. I said, of course. After this, lo aleinu, the Rav had a very serious operation. And they had to send out a note that the wedding is postponed because of the Rav's illness, and Baruch Hashem, they get married in March 1960. But you see, the document would lead you to believe, I had this too. I came up with a chesped for Rabbi Revel, given by his son in Baltimore. beautiful chesed, very fascinating material. It dealt with his youth and his involvement with the Bund. And do you know that I published it and gave the date it was given? You know that people got in touch with me, that chesed was never given. It snowed that day in Baltimore, it was snowed out. You see, and you would never know that from the manuscripts. And I just mentioned, all right? Something else that's turned up in archives, this proves that Rav Kefta tells the truth. This is a letter from Agudat Israel of America to the Joint Distribution Committee, and they want to keep in touch with them, and they need their help, everything that they're trying to do. The letter is dedicated August 11th, 1941, and on the letterhead, Executive Committee, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Executive Chairman. So you see, the Rav was not only a member of the Moetzia Gedolei HaTorah, but he was the Yosef Rosh of Agudat Israel in America. Okay? Which proves he was an Agudist 100% at that time. Finally, I am told, Benjamin, that you have a yachas to Lubavitch. This
not like my genes, but in my heart.
This is the Rebbe's minhagim on Purim. Are you interested in this?
Yes.
Okay. And this is a tshura. They have a minig in Chabad when you get married. You publish a booklet about your family's relationship with the Rebbe. This was published by this family, Mann, and you'll see some very fascinating material. So I'm happy to have someone who will appreciate it, because I have so much material that comes and goes, we have to pass it on. I'm signing off on the class here until we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'da. Morty, you can open it to any questions. Questions. Yes.
Rabbi, just one thing. I'm not going to say that Gene Simmons is the firmest guy in the world, although who knows, but he's very pro-Israel. He's always making statements. He raises money for the IDF. And in Hollywood, that's a big deal these days, you know, so you take what you can. But I know he's like, I think he puts in appearances even. He performs for like soldiers in the hospital here or something like that.
But I also want to hear that he does that's a felt nishta mincha, that he davens three times a day.
Let's hope.
Absolutely.
He's a tzabar. He was born in Israel. He was born in Haifa.
When did he get to America?
As a youngster, his father was left behind. He and his mother emigrated to America when he was 7 or 8, I believe.
And the father was left behind, you say?
Correct. And in 2011, he came back to Israel for the first time and was reunited with siblings and his other siblings.
Wow. Okay, Kala Kavod. Maybe we can invite him to join this year. Adarabba v'adarabba. Okay.
Two quick postscripts. The Rav's nephew by marriage, married to the Rav's niece, was among the successors of Rabbi Shubo at B'nai Moshe, Rabbi Alan Lazarus.
Wait.
Eventually.
Rabbi Alan Lazarus, who's married to the Rav's niece.
Was married to Rav with Dr. Harry Mazelman's daughter.
Uh-huh.
In other words, the Rav's nephew by marriage was one of the successors to the rabbinate at B'nai Moshe in Brighton.
Right. And the shul remained conservative? Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Speaking of
archival accuracy, just a very quick note. Many of the bios of Rabbi Shubo refer to the fact that the Rav spoke at his funeral, when in fact we know the Rav spoke at the Shloshim.
Right, the Rav spoke at the Shloshim. Wait, did you see the Rav's Shloshim talk? It's overwhelming. Did you read it yet?
Yomo already responded. and I have it in front of me. It's a wonderful...
I was just overwhelmed because it's the Rav in his prime. This is the Rav, the quintessential Moreinu V'Rabbeinu. Hey, anyone else? We're hearing a lot of...
Yes, Rabbi, speaking of Mincha, there was a story that years ago, Mission Impossible and Star Trek were both filming at Desilu Studios at the same time, and Stephen Hill called out Shatner and Nimoy for a minion for Mincha.
Yeah, I heard that story, and it's probably true, but the...
The producer was named Soloveitchik. He was a relative of the Rav.
Oh my God! Yeah. To me, it's overwhelming. The five great grandchildren of Rabbi Shubo. We should all have that schut to have such great grandchildren. I'm only sorry that when they publicized the young lady, Deutsch, that the articles did not mention she is a great-granddaughter of Rabbi Yosef Shubo. Okay, maybe now it'll get some publicity. But what a story, what a story.
Rabbi, I sent you, speaking of wedding invitations, I just sent you the Rav's wedding invitation.
The Rav's wedding?
I have a picture of it.
Jay, one second. What didn't you get the Rav's wedding invitation at auction? Jay Solomon.
No, it was on display at one of the YU things, and I took a picture of it.
Okay, one second. Jay, what wedding invitation did you get at auction?
I have an original version of it.
Ah, I'm right. I remember seeing it. Remember you gave it to me right after you bought it at auction. You gave it to me. I wanted to use it in the Rav, but Tova wouldn't let me. She said it's too personal. So, all right, if Tova says it's too personal, unfortunately, when you go into the public thoroughfare, you become a public individual, nothing is personal anymore. But I would never do anything to hurt, you know, Tova's feelings. She's the Rav's daughter.
They did a blow-up of it at one of the YU sticks once. That's how I got the picture of it.
Very nice. Very nice.
I think I told you this story. When they started the Stern-based Medrash, the Rav Shita is that a woman wants to learn, and it's Lishma, you teach them. So they started the Stern-based Medrash program. The Rav gave the first cheer, and YU PR was there, they took pictures. A couple of months later, Tara Vidas was in bad financial straits. They had different pictures of Gedolim in various newspapers saying to give money to Tara Vidas. And there was a picture of the Rav, it was either in the Algemeiner or one of the papers, saying to give money for Torah V'das. It's a Mosa Torah, it's in danger of going under. Well, someone I know noticed that the picture of the Rav was the one from the Stern-based Medrash program with the women propped out.
All right, I can understand.
I don't know if they did it on purpose, but it was kind of interesting. So do you think it's ironic that Mr. Mendelevich wanted Hasidish overtones in Torah V'das, and now, on an official level, YU has Litvish Rosh Yeshiva who are not opposed to Hasidish, and they now have Chabad, Shurim, and Shem Shmuel, they hired Rav Moshe Weinberger, and Torah V'das, on an official level, hired Rav Yitzchak, who's as Litvish as you can be. And not really sympathetic to Hasidish.
Yeah, well, Baruch Hashem, the waves are merging into one. I have pleaded with YU to organize officially a Tomchei Tumimim program and follow what Chabad did in 1897, where they organized the yeshiva, where they organized the yeshiva, where the first hour you studied Hasidus, and then it was a regular yeshiva. And YU would have to build the mikvah, Hasidim would have to go to mikvah every day, down the block, Machon Lev, built a beautiful mikvah for the Hasidic youngsters there. I love it. I think it's beautiful. All right, halavai, halavai. Halavai, we should achieve a synthesis. It has to come, because the Litvakin are here to stay and the Chassidim are here to stay. And gradually the sharpness is dulled and we merge even more and more. By the way, in Israel today, they added a heater to
the Ariz Mikvah Tzfat.
They added a heater, okay? We
somebody
don't
should donate one. I did meet a musmach of Torah Vidas in Atlanta once, who was a Reform rabbi.
In Philadelphia, there was a very prominent conservative rabbi. Rabbi Pickholz was a Torah Vidas graduate. There were plenty of graduates, but I don't believe that happened.
The only conservative rabbi I know, he was a musmach of Chaim.
Yeah. All right, it's all possible. I know, I know a Chaim Berlin graduate who argued with me that YU was not frum enough back in 1960, and he went on to become a very prominent conservative rabbi. His wife finally had to divorce him. I don't think he's alive today, but became a not just a conservative rabbi, but belev v'nefesh, believed in it. But thank God the children turned out very nice because the wife was very strong. And one of them has made big contributions to the Israeli scene. He brought American food to Israel. So whenever you get a bagel in Israel, you have to thank his father, the Chaim Berlin boy, who became a conservative rabbi, for allowing his wife to raise such good children. All right, let me thank you all from the bottom. I'm hearing endless airplanes flying overhead. And I want to thank you all for honoring me with your presence. I apologize to Mark for using you as a foil with Tanur the Achnai, but it was a good question. You just have to know how to answer it. That question I asked, but Ellie's question was even better, and there at least I knew the answer. The chemist, I'll never forget that, the chimica. And I remember the Rav who would get upset if you quoted from the Ridbaz. Oh boy, he didn't forgive anyone who mocked his grandfather. That was Chok V'lo Yavor, plain and simple. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya, B'sora Tova, the Leinu V'al Kol Yisrael.